The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our goal is to empower U.S. military veterans to live their absolute best lives. And we do that by providing tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that they can apply into their lives to become wiser, stronger, smarter, more resilient, and more capable human beings in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about here can obviously apply to you. And if you like what we have to say and the information we provide and the guests we bring on, please head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. It really helps to spread word about the show and to get this helpful information into the hands of more veterans so that they can in turn improve their lives and shape the future of this country. This podcast is brought to you by the amazing, the wonderful F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of fats. These are portable snacks that you can carry with you anywhere. It's so hard to find a low-carb snack out there, but these guys have done it. They got macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with pecan butter. They've got awesome meat sticks, and they've got these delicious cheese snacks that they put out there. Plus, they're an amazing company. They send boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front line. It's not something we ask them to do. It's something they volunteered to do. So if you want to get some of the best low-carb, high-fat snacks on the planet, head over to www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your first order. This podcast is also brought to you by the amazing, awesome people at Save the Brave. Save the Brave is an organization that provides camaraderie events for veterans. They do fishing events, they do golfing events, they do other sporting events, and they also do a lot of work to help Gold Star families. And look, we've all heard stories about veterans charities where the executive boards are taking these giant salaries, and I don't have a problem with that at all. But here's the thing. I want to make sure that whatever organization I'm talking about is doing amazing work. SaveTheBrave.org is doing absolutely outstanding work. Their board doesn't take any salary whatsoever, and they are having an amazing impact. They're focused on getting veterans to live their absolute best lives, and that's what this podcast is about, and that's why we wanted to work with them. So if you're interested in volunteering or donating to Save the Brave, head over to www.savethebrave.org and make your donation or your request today. Finally, this podcast is brought to you by Warrior Soul Apparel. This is a clothing company that I actually helped to start a couple of years ago as we were beginning the brand Warrior Soul. We've got some amazing t-shirts. We've got skivvy shirts with some pretty funny sayings on there, like, I love Jesus, but I cuss sometimes. We've also got some awesome hero shirts. We have the amazing Hard Times Breed Hard People series. And these are just great shirts that I've helped create. And they support the show. So if you're interested in getting some Warrior Soul shirts, head over to www.warriorsoul.shop. And finally, if you're interested in joining a new group that we are putting together here at Warrior Soul, a group for those who are looking to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries, stick around to the end. We'll have some information for you to check out. With that, let's get into the episode. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? It's Christmas. Well, it's going to be Christmas in a couple of days. And there's a reason why I am releasing this episode on today, December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas. It's because it's one of the most inspirational and feel-good stories that I've ever come across. It's the story of a U.S. Marine who is serving in a combat zone in Afghanistan. Him and his unit are in a compound, and they're catching fire every single day. And in the midst of that experience, they spot a little floppy white dog. And that dog ventures over into the compound, befriends this Marine, befriends his unit, and wins his way into their hearts. And at that point, the Marine in question faced a choice, because you know, if you've served and you've been deployed, you know that it's against the rules to feed the dogs, to do anything with the dogs whatsoever, to have contact with the dogs. But he decided that he was going to sneak this dog back and that he was going to rescue him from that combat zone. And he did that. And today they've got to live happily ever after. Now, there's a whole lot more to that story. There's a lot to do with combat. There's a lot to do with the dog's story that you should know about. And you could read about it in the book, Craig and Fred. And the author's name is Craig Grossi. And he's a friend of mine, a very good friend. And we got to meet when he came out here to Pasadena, along with his fiance, Nora, and Fred. And they were given a presentation out there. They got to talk about the book, and they introduced Fred to the crowd. And they literally filled this library up across the country from anybody they knew. They filled this library up with fans of this story. They've been all over the place spreading this message of stubborn positivity. The story of a dog whose attitude was so contagious, it translated to a bunch of gnarly, you know, stubborn, pig-headed recon Marines who were serving in this compound and warmed their hearts. And that's what I love about this story, because it transcends everything. Transcends class, transcends politics, transcends religion, transcends absolutely anything you can think of. And at a time like Christmas, which I know is a Christian holiday, but we need to hear stories like this. In times like this, when everybody's so divided, we need to hear uniting stories like this. So, number one, I invite you to listen to this episode. It's the third episode I've done with Craig and Fred. And number two, I invite you to go and read this book. It would make an amazing late stocking stuffer if you can get your hands on it. It would make an amazing story to tell your children. And I think that everybody could benefit from reading it. So with that, let's get into this conversation with Mr. Craig Grossi. And we'll have some cameo appearances if you're on YouTube from his pal, Fred the Afghan. And let's talk about this stubborn positivity that they're bringing to the world. Craig Grossi, man, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Real good. Yeah. Life on the road.
Dude, it's great having you back on the show. I know you and Fred and Ruby and Nora are getting into some crazy stuff out there. Where are you right now?
Right now we're in Jackson, Wyoming. We rented a little cabin for the week. We kind of got to get caught up on a lot of work. We got some new exciting Fred kind of merch coming out. We came up with this new line. We're calling it Semper Fred. And so everything
is, that's awesome.
Instead of Semper Fi, it's Semper Fred. And I feel like I don't remember when it jumped in my head. We were driving, I'm sure, somewhere, and I was like, Semper Fred, because it's Fred is. It's complicated and simple at the same time, right? Like his story and his journey, it means a lot of things to different people, and but overall, it's always been kind of this commitment to positivity and stubborn positivity and resilience and gratitude. And when I think, when I was thinking about it, it's even more fascinating. Like, I think I told you last time we talked, or one of the times we talked, when it was, I got a message from somebody from Norway. It was actually an Afghan refugee. Somebody, he was, when he was a kid in the 90s, his family fled Afghanistan and they settled in Norway. And he wrote me this really amazing message on Facebook about how glad he was that I saved Fred and grateful that, you know, I was there trying to help Afghanistan and the Marines. And he said, you know, it's really amazing that you named him Fred, because in Norwegian, Fred is the word for like peacefulness, and like to be at peace is to be Fred. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I totally named him by accident. Like, it wasn't a purposeful thing. And years later, it ends up being this very meaningful phrase that represents in a whole other culture, this peacefulness that is Fred. And that's what got him out of that situation that he was born into, was being, you know, peaceful and kind and positive. And so it just comes completely full circle when it comes to just, yeah, it's like we're selling t-shirts and dog collars and hats and stuff, but it, like everything about Fred's story and everything that we do, when you scratch the surface a little bit, there's a lot more to it. And I'm really excited to give people something really tangible that they can wear or just put on their dog when they're walking their dog around, and like think about, you know, the opportunities that we all have every day to be more like Fred, to be more Fred and to always be Fred, you know? So it's exciting.
Well, this is the third time you're on our podcast and you're in an elite group of guests here.
Yeah. Because,
you know,
company, man.
Yeah. And what I want to do is, you know, if you guys haven't heard this story before, Craig is the author of a book called Craig and Fred. It's one of the most amazing stories I've ever read.
Thanks,
Craig, for just a couple of minutes, can you give people a little bit of background in case they haven't heard the first two podcasts we did?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I was in, it was actually, what's really cool is a couple of days ago, November 22nd was Fred's 9-year anniversary of, he beat me home by a couple months. So he made it to JFK, customs in November 22nd of 2010. And, so backing up a couple months, it was like October, early October, late September of 2010. I was a counterintel human intelligence HET guy. For anybody that's familiar with Marine human intel, we call ourselves HET. I was attached to First Recon Charlie Company, and we had just come out of like a Trek-NAWA Marja kind of cleanup. That whole Marja thing was kind of wrapping up by the end of the summer of 2010. And I'd kind of managed to really earn my spot within Recon. They don't like a lot of attachments. They don't like anybody that can slow them down. But they like having me around, cause I just liked talking to people, and I was never afraid of patrol, and I was ready to go. Just give me a rip it and some Folgers crystals. I'm ready to rock. And so they made me kind of a permanent attachment to their headquarters element. And so we started getting briefed on Sangin, and everything, like, it was the first time I'd seen any of these recon guys kind of nervous, because these guys had Fallujah time, Mosul time, like all over the place. And all, everything we're hearing about Sangin was really scary. I mean, the numbers of the Taliban were unlike anywhere else in the country. And there was a unit, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, was in charge of kind of trying to secure the district center. And they were losing Marines like 7 to 10 a week. You know, just crazy stuff. And so we were going to insert north of the district center, north of 3-5, with nowhere to go, no base, like nobody waiting for us, and just try to make our own little our own little combat outpost right on the fringe of the green zone, and if nothing else, just distract the Taliban from 3-5 to give them some breathing room. And so that first week, we inserted a helicopter. We found a compound. We filled sandbags and just fortified it as best we could. And that first week, we were under constant attack, and it was pretty staggering. And in between gunfights, I would be like, you know, getting some water and cleaning my gun, and I'd see this funny little dog, you know, kind of trotting around the place. And he always made me smile. Every time I catch a glimpse of him, I would kind of smile and be like, it's a funny dog, you know, because most of them, we saw a lot of dogs, you know, like, you know, over there, there's just a lot of strays that don't really, you know what it means to be a dog. Like they're really wild animals and it's hard to see. So we always just kind of turned our backs to him. But this guy was just different right away. And after things calmed down, the Taliban really got the message. I think it was like after that first week, I think, I can't remember who the general was at the time. It might've been Mattis. He dubbed, you know, First Recon like the most deadly unit in the country. Cause we were swacking a lot of Taliban, and they finally were like, all right, we can't keep losing guys like this. And so they backed off, and we started to look around and trying to kind of get a little more settled in the area. And I pulled out my computer. It was the first time I could really get caught up on my reports, to kind of relay back some of the realities from the battlefield. And I saw this little tail kind of like periscope across the top of my computer. And I was like, here he is again. And I put it down and I grabbed some jerky, and I was like, I gotta see this dog. I gotta check him out. He's definitely like worth, you know, to see if he's friendly. And I got a couple of feet from him, and I almost turned around because he was covered in bugs and ticks and fur was all matted. I could see his rib cage. I was like, man, this dog's, you know, he's not going to, you know, be interested in you. Clearly hasn't been taken care of before. And I heard a little thump, 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 thump coming from him. And I looked up and he was kind of wagging his tail, you know, and kind of looking at me with these big eyes. And I was like, all right. And I took another step closer and I held the jerky out. And he surprised me again, because just as gently as he could, he reached up and took the jerky with his front teeth and chewed it very slowly and politely. And from that moment on, like, he let me give him some scratches and some rubs. And from that moment on, he was my dog. And everybody in the company, everybody in Charlie Company fell in love with him right away. And we all realized, you know, like, there was something really special about him. And there was no accident that we ended up taking that compound, you know, and that he happened to be there. And we decided to do whatever it took to get him out. And it is like, looking back, and I tell the story, you know, kind of perpetually. The book has been out for 2 years now, but we've kind of continuously toured because people love hearing the story of, you know, for so many reasons. And that's why I keep telling it, is because I think every time I tell it, somebody takes something away from it that I'm not intentionally putting in there. It's just, they go back. But to me, it always goes back to those first moments when Fred, you know, what I was expecting from Fred and what anybody I think would have expected from a dog in that situation is to growl and to raise their fur and to try to react, you know, negatively. And he chose what was arguably the less sensical and the much more difficult route by wagging his tail. And that has made all the difference in his life. And it's been a constant source of inspiration to me, and now to my readers and to anybody that hears our stories, our story. And so that's, you know, that's the kind of the hip pocket version of it. But I talk about Fred, all the time, and it never gets old. So I don't want to go too far.
Yeah. No, I mean, and the thing is, I think I read this book, I think the first time I came in contact with you, it was your publisher who got in touch with me about coming on a podcast, and I got the book, and you know, reading through it, I was immediately like, the story immediately grasped me. And I think, you know, during the time I was going through a little bit of a rough time too.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just, the story was so inspirational. And then bringing you onto the podcast and actually seeing you guys and then meeting you guys in person, and seeing how people react to you. I mean, people from all walks of life. People,
yeah,
from
all beautiful. Countries. Yeah.
I mean, there's towns that have had like rallies and parades dedicated to you guys. Yeah, you know,
it's crazy
what it's doing. It's just such a great thing. How does that feel, man?
It's amazing, man. It, it just, if it, it does a lot, it does a lot for me. And it, there's not a moment that goes by that I don't like take stock of it. And like, you know, like if it was all over tomorrow and no one wanted to hear the story anymore, and like I would be totally fine, you know, I would be disappointed. I love doing what we do, but we've done so much and it just keeps snowballing into bigger things. And that's especially when I talk at schools, because we do a lot of school events at elementary schools all the way through high school. And we actually have some college events coming up this year. I always try to emphasize that, you know, when you really dedicate yourself to gratitude and really dissect what that means, you know, and it's so easy to just say, oh, stay positive, you know, when like, that's just, it's almost become kind of a write-off, you know, like, oh, we'll find, you know, find the silver lining. Like that's easy to say, but really hard to do on a daily basis when things are actually really bad. Mm-hmm. And that's where our story, I think, really has legs, to make a Fred short leg joke. But, you know, he's got these little legs, but his story has some long legs, and it's got a lot of travel to it because he is the embodiment of that, you know, and just being a dog, an animal in a really difficult situation, and having the mental kind of capacity to wag his tail, you know, and has changed the course of his life. And then when I came home, he did that for me all over again through just being a dog, you know, just doing what dogs do, being there every day, ready to go, you know, and then on a larger scale, when I started walking him around my neighborhood in DC, and people would want to know, you know, what kind of dog he was, cause he's so interesting and handsome. I started to kind of open up, and I started to tell people, you know, this is where I found him, and this is what his life was like, and this is how I got him home. And, oh, this is the reality of life in Sangin for the people of Sangin, and for the Marines that are there. And these are some of the friends that I lost. And like little by little, I started to tell the story, and I started to realize, you know, how much purpose there was in the pain that I'd been through. And that's where it goes beyond, you know, just the silver lining kind of comment, or the, you know, stay positive kind of comment. It really turns into an approach to your daily existence. And that's what I mean when I say it has legs, because it's become so much bigger than just this neat little dog story, you know?
One of the things I want to mention here too, is because you took a route with your life, with this whole thing that you went after meaning, right? Mm-hmm. You went after meaning. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, I know that prior, while you were writing the book, you were working in the intelligence field for a bit, yeah. Right? After the civilian intelligence field.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of like a secure government job. And then from there's Fred. What's up, buddy? What's up, buddy?
<It's sleeping. laughs>
And then from there, you know, you took a big risk to take this story to the public, right?
Yeah.
And I know you went from working intelligence, you work in retail for a while.
Yeah.
Trying to get this book out, trying to get everything together. You know, that's an amazing thing. And I think in today's day and age, like, we grow up with this idea, we've got to pursue goals, and those goals have got to be centered around, you know, making money and doing all these things, but you took a very different route there. How was that for you?
Thanks, man. It was scary. It was scary. Cause I grew up in a very pragmatic, you know, household. My dad's an engineer, you know, a very rational thinker, and a very accomplished guy, you know, but I felt by my junior year of high school, if I hadn't had like the next 10 years of my life mapped out, that I was a total failure. And like most of my friends, you know, in high school kind of seemed like they had that, you know, they knew, you know, what college they were going to go to, what they were going to major in. And like it was crazy. And I was getting C's and D's and, you know, I was getting, not really getting anywhere with school, even though I was working really hard. And I finally, through the Marine Corps and through the intelligence community, finally found my footing and saw my future. I could very easily and happily had a very fulfilling career in the intelligence community. And on top of that, you know, one of the things I didn't like, one of the reasons I left to go back to school was I was at the DIA, which at the time in like 2012, 2011, was under, you know, some, in my opinion, some mismanagement. I felt like there, myself and a lot of other people weren't getting the roles that we should have. And so I left and went and I started using my GI Bill benefits. And it was originally just to go get my degree and then go back into the intelligence community. And my goal was to work for the CIA. And because they just have a completely different culture that from some of the other agencies that and legitimate opportunities. And so my first semester at I ended up getting into Georgetown, which is still hilarious to me because I barely graduated high school. But my first semester at Georgetown, I kind of knew I wasn't going back to Intel. I was going to play it, you know, kind of continue to push that ball down the road. And you know, that would always be kind of my safety, I guess. But being in a classroom for the first time felt like the right place for me. I loved the environment that was kind of created there by the professors. And, I loved writing even academically. I loved, you know, the process. And in my free time, I started to write the story that I've been telling at dog parks and street corners and all over the city. And the more I wrote the story, the more I realized like, wait a minute, like this is so much bigger than me. You know, and I started to kind of overcome a lot of the barriers, I think, that we as people, and especially us as Marines and veterans, really put in our own way. These barriers that are kind of important when it comes to being a part of a unit and turning wrenches and filling sandbags and digging holes and returning fire, you know, and coordinating. You can't think about your own needs and your own wants and your own dreams, you know, they kind of beat that out of you by necessity. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can overcome when we get out is to realize, you know, that's not how most people operate. Like most people think about, you know, what they want, you know, they don't think about, you know, the diminishing their own accomplishments and talking, you know, and talking down their own goals. For the greater good. It's not selfish to want to pursue, you know, something that you have a dream about. And that was kind of what I was starting to overcome when I went back to school. And every time I sat down and wrote the story, cause I started over, you know, countless times and it kept getting better and better. And I kept remembering more and more detail about Fred and the reality of Sangin. And I started to realize, you know, that this is, I guess the way I justified it in my head was even still kind of a like a veteran Marine kind of way, you know, it was like, this is my duty. Like this is this story. And the reason I made it out, you know, after having some close calls and the reason Fred made it out after, you know, just defying the odds, like hiding him on Camp Leatherneck was, I can't believe that we were able to do that. And the reason that we were here, the reason that we are here is to tell this story. And so even through all the growth, I still kind of had to spin it, you know, to in my own head in a way that made it, you know, something bigger than myself and something, you know, kind of duty centric. And it's been worth it. You know, like I ended up getting hired after I graduated. I ended up getting hired by a firm that worked for the CIA, and it was the job was the dream job I would have, you know, killed for 3 years before. And I had a window. I had 8 months cause my clearance had lapsed, while I was at school, and they're like, all right, you're hired. See you in 8 months. Right. Like one of those things. And so I was like, all right, I got 8 months to see if the book, is what I'm supposed to do. And the story, you know, is what I'm supposed to do. And so I really like hunkered down, and I was working at a, I was working retail at a men's store in DC, and like I was a terrible employee because they let me bring Fred into the store. And anytime anybody walked in, I was like, "Hey, how's it going? Like, yeah, you looking for some ties or some shoes or, oh, you want to hear the story about my dog?" And I was just like literally telling everybody the story because you never knew like who was going to walk in. It could have been an editor, you know, or something. And so I was in full on, you know, just like campaign mode and on social media and writing, working on the book proposal and just like putting everything I had into it. And Nora was just like had my back like 100%. And I couldn't have, I think if I hadn't had Nora, who's now my fiance, at that time, you know, I would have given up. I would have been like, ah, like, who do you think you are? You know, like you just go back to work, you know? And she kept kind of pushing me and reminding me that, you know, my writing was good and that, you know, this is what I really wanted. And this is what, you know, I was supposed to do. And so we just kind of kept pushing and pushing, and it came down to the wire, where it was like I had a polygraph and they scheduled it for the morning after my annual fundraiser that I do every year, in honor of, Justin Schmalstick, Gunnery Sergeant Justin Schmalstick, who was killed in Sangin, protecting a whole patrol from an IED in the middle of the night. It was a really crappy day and a really long day. We had already lost another guy that same day, Sean Osterman, to machine gun fire. He had taken out like two or three machine gun positions that the Taliban had placed around us, and they got a lucky shot on him. And so every year we do a fundraiser for Justin and for Sean, and it's kind of turned into this much bigger night in terms of just, it's about, you know, anybody that we've lost too soon. And I called and tried to get my polygraph rescheduled because I was like, hey, this is why, you know, I do this fundraiser every year. And it's like, I'm not going to be in good shape the next morning. And they were like kind of hard asses about it. They're like, no, like, this is your date. And I was like, okay. And this was the first year that Justin's family came down from Pittsburgh, and we did a big concert. I'm in a cover band and played music, and Nora gets up and plays and sings. And after the show, we're at a bar down the street called The Pug. And I got my arm around Justin's dad, and his mom is there. And I'm like looking around the room, and I looked at Nora, and I was like, I'm not going tomorrow. Mm. And at the time, like I was in severe debt. You know, like Nora's job was keeping us afloat financially, you know, but we were kind of scraping by, and this job with the CIA was going to pay really well, and it was going to mean a lot of stability and in our life. And I was like, I'm not going tomorrow. And she was like, yeah, like, don't, you know, it made sense. And, but it didn't at the same time, you know, I called out and I said, I'm sick, you know, I can't come. And it was literally like, so that I was pretty hungover for like a day. And then the day after that day, I reached out to an organization or a website called the Dodo, and mm-hmm. everything took off from there. And I had already reached out to like a ton of different online platforms, you know, that kind of run viral stories, and I'd reached out to local news media around DC, you know, trying to get somebody to do a piece, you know, on Fred. And I kind of already written it for them. I was like, kind of handing it to them, like, here, you know, here's this great story about me and my dog. And no one was really biting. And I found the Dodo, and like, I was on the phone within an hour with one of their writers, one of their reporters, and they did an article. They linked all the pictures to our social media, and then they did a video, and the video got like 20 million views in like 2 days.
Wow.
And then I got an email from HarperCollins, and because they mentioned in the article like, hey, that Craig is working on a book about their story, and here comes this senior editor from, you know, one of the biggest publishing firms in the world, you know, hey, what's the story with this book, like, how far along are you? And I was like, here we go. You know, and it's literally since that video, since that moment, since I looked at Nora, you know, that night and said, I'm not going, you know, like, it's been this incredible trajectory that hasn't really slowed down. And it's taken, you know, it hasn't been easy. It hasn't all just kind of started to like pile in. We've had to kind of keep our feet, you know, planted on the skinny pedal and not let the momentum really, really, you know, get sucked out of our sails. But it's just, I think the most important thing to me is how clear it's been that this is the path that we're supposed to be on. And that's just, that just comes with time, with just continuously hearing people's reactions to our story and seeing when we travel. You know, we were just in Gillette, Wyoming. It's this awesome little town, little-ish. It's like 30,000 people, but it's a coal mining town in the northeast corner of Wyoming. I don't know anybody there. You know, I've never been there, you know, and we packed this room, you know, in their local library, and we ended up staying like three extra nights because we just fell in love with this community, and they welcomed us in. And there's something magical about that. You know, and we don't want to take it for granted or turn our backs on it for a second. So it's, yeah, that's a really, sorry. That's a long,
oh, man.
Answer, man. But you always get me real philosophical, man. I love talking to you because you're really good about, you know, about kind of asking these questions that really, really help me kind of really analyze the path that I've been on, you know, in the last couple of years.
Well, I think it's important because, you know, when we think about our audience out there, a lot of these guys they're either getting out or they've been out for a few years.
Yeah.
Right. And when you look at life and you're trying to make sense out of things, right. And you go through the military, it's supposed to be this huge thing that you go through and then you get out, and honestly, a lot of times getting out is anticlimactic, right?
Yeah,
there's like parade for you. There's no like anything. And, you know, there's a combination of things that go on. Number one, nobody's going to hand you a guide and say, all right, this is what your next mission is. This is what you got to do.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of pressure that's also there that says, okay, you got to go and you got to do this. You got to go to school, get a secure job, settle down and things like that.
Right.
But the problem with that is that a lot of guys do that and then they end up being extraordinarily unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's because you don't have the meaning that you did while you were serving.
Right.
You don't have the meaning. And the thing about meaning is like, you can't just create meaning. Like it's got to come from facing some kind of struggle. It's got to come from, you know, standing up for a cause that's bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about you is that you recognized it with Fred. You know, you recognized it with the story you had and what this story could mean to people. And I think that's why you're in such a good place right now. Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want. Because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's C-H-R-I-S @warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm so glad that, you know, and I kind of have to keep going back to Nora, like my fiance, because if I hadn't had her in my life, I wouldn't have recognized the, and she's really good about deflecting any credit, but it has a lot to do with the people that you have around you. And I didn't, it wasn't that I had bad people around me. It was that in some cases I did, but they were more comfortable with me being the version of myself that I've been for a long time. And that they were, in some cases, you know, even people that you're really close to, they're afraid for you and they don't want to see you fail, you know? And so they'll try to keep you kind of in a box, kind of in this little definition, you know, of who you are. And Nora, you know, saw something bigger. She saw, you know, in a way she saw who I was before the Marines and before all this stuff, you know, and that's kind of who I've become now. Cause in high school, like I never missed a chance to jump on a stage, you know, or I did the morning announcements every morning. I was the annoying, like happy kid at like 7 a.m. I was like, you know, waking everybody up with, you know, reading the weather and I was just always having fun, never really cared about what other people thought about me, you know, and could make fun of myself, like, you know, like till the cows came home and laugh with everybody. And that I kind of lost some of that through the Marines, you know, like we talked about a minute ago, just kind of how they have to kind of, you know, beat that individuality out of you by necessity. But I've found that again. And I don't know if that's the key. I don't know if that's what every, you know, I don't know if that's what every veteran needs to do when they get out, if they need to retrace their steps and go back to who they were before they joined, because they might not like who they were before they joined. They might like the things that they've become, you know, through their service. And so I guess the real path, the real ticket is to just be honest with yourself and try to identify the decisions and the people in your life that are influencing those decisions that aren't necessarily consistent with what you want. And mm-hmm. That's where it gets a little scary, because that's where, you know, you have to kind of stand up and create boundaries with people and really stick to your guns. And that's going to create problems. But down the road, when you've opened your own, you know, lemonade stand or donut shop or, you know, CrossFit gym or whatever, and you know, and it's 5 years later and you're content and happy and fulfilled, you know, those people they'll come around. And if they don't, then if somebody can't be happy for you when you're on your own journey and you're on your own path, and then they don't belong with you on that particular portion of that path, you know, and you hope that they'll catch up, you know, at some point, but you can't let them kind of slow you down. You know, you have to really, but the first step is identifying, you know, what you really want.
Right. And it's also got to be about, like, it's also got to be something that's about more than you.
Right.
It's got to be about something that's more than you, because like, I mean, I could see just from doing this podcast, like, you know, when I first started this out, I was like, is anybody listening to this? Is anybody getting anything from this? And the thing is, what drove me is understanding that, yeah, there's people listening to it. It might be a few people, but they're getting something out of it.
You know?
And that's the big thing. Like, you can't just go through life and say, okay, I'm going to set this goal because it's going to lead to an increase in my retirement account, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to, you have to see to your responsibilities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if there's not meaning there's not going to be happiness. Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. You have to, there's always going to be the back and forth about, you know, like what's rational, what's practical, and there's always room for practicality. Like, no one's telling you to like sell all your stuff and live out of your car, you know, like it's, you can still kind of have one foot in the, you know, in the practical path while experimenting and kind of, you know, sending out, you know, kind of feelers to, you know, different things that you might want to do and different paths and different journeys that you might want to take. And when one of those grabs, you know, you're like, oh, here we go, you know, and you'll know. And that's kind of the way that it's gone for me. And it's just, I'm always just so cautious about telling anyone, you know, what to do. Cause it's like, and you see this all the time, I'm sure, you know, like people are so sold on one journey and like one kind of, like, when you get out, this is what you do. Like, and we hear that a lot when we get out and when we're in, you know, and it's fascinating to me that anybody could ever, no matter how successful, could ever stand in front of a group of people and tell them, you know, what to do with their lives. Like, it's so, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't know, you know, how you can have that much authority, but.
Yeah. And I think people are like vampires, right? So we want to convert people to our line of thinking, no matter what it is. You
know? Yeah. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. You see it all the time. You see it out there on social media. You see it, you know, with your friends. People want other people to be like them. And, you know, it's a dangerous thing to get into, because it can happen like that. You don't realize it. Right.
Yeah. And it's, oh, this is kind of exciting. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this already, but, I'm officially working on my next book. And you just made me think about it, because, the whole theme of it and the title, actually, they let me pick the title, which is kind of rare. Usually the publishers like to do that, but it's going to be called Second Chances. And it's kind of goes into what you were just talking about. And the idea of everybody trying to be like, you know, emulate other people, and us trying to kind of get people to emulate our path and our journey. And for the last year, I've been volunteering with incarcerated veterans at Maine State Prison. And I kind of got my foot in the door up there through Fred and through our story. Just, I went up there to the book club, the prison book club, read Craig and Fred. And I went up there to just talk to them. And when I left that day, I was hooked. Like, I was like, you know, this, there's something special going on here. Cause I worked in prisons for 4 years. My first 4 years in the Marines, I was a corrections guy. And the culture within Maine State Prison was unlike any prison I'd ever seen. And it was like almost counter to the book, you know, that was written on corrections. Like they're like Lance Corporal Grossi would have said that they're coddling the prisoners, you know, and that they're being too nice to them. But that's the reason I jumped onto this is because it all comes down to this guy named Randy Liberty, which is the greatest name in the history of names. And he's the warden at the time. Now he's the commissioner for the whole state, but he's a veteran, Iraq war veteran, retired, sergeant major from the army. His dad was incarcerated at Maine State Prison. Mm. And one of his earliest memories was he was like 6 or 7, was going to visit his dad at Maine State Prison and with his mom and his other brother. And his whole life has been, you know, trying to break that cycle within his own life of kind of poverty and crime, and also doing it for others. And so that's been, you know, if he had just taken the hand that he had been dealt, and he had just kind of, if he had just only gone through his life without, you know, getting in a little bit of trouble, you know, or just, you know, scraping by, but not, you know, not being incarcerated like his dad, then that would have arguably been a success. Like, you know, if he had broken that, it's like, but he's taken it a step further and committed his life to creating opportunities, creating programs for the men that are incarcerated, but it's also having this profound impact on the families and the communities that these men come from. And so it's just been fascinating to spend so much time up there and see the growth and the impact that these programs are having. Cause one of them is a dog program. They train dogs to be service dogs. And there's so much work that goes into it. In order to get the opportunity to even do that, the men who are incarcerated have to defy a lot of the expectations that prison life puts on you. Because there's a culture in there within the inmates that is very counter to, you know, the work that is being done with a dog, because it's a lot about patience and love and understanding and kindness and patience again, because they get these dogs when they're like 8 weeks old, like puppies, right? Not 8 weeks. I don't know, it's like a couple months old. Like they're just these goofy little puppies, and you see these big tatted up, like, you know, cons, you know, working and speaking in like puppy talk, you know, to these dogs. And over the course of 18 months, they take them from these little sloppy little pups to these highly trained, tools, appendages that will, you know, will go on to change the lives of people that they might never meet, mm-hmm. you know, and they're bringing them pill bottles, and they're opening doors, and they're, you know, like learning all these incredible tasks from these men who, from our society's perspective and expectations, are, you know, lost. They're doomed, you know, in terms of just anybody that spent any time behind bars, you know, is painted with this scarlet letter, and they're not getting like good time out of it. They're not getting, you know, any extra money out of it. Like they get a certificate and they're certified dog trainers and stuff like that. But they're taking this opportunity to do this work because they want to, and because they want to be, again, to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I think I'm just really excited about starting to work on this next book, because I think it can show people again more stories and more examples of just, you know, how far you can get when you only really worry about your own expectations of yourself, and you don't worry about what other people expect from you. And that's just circles back to, I think to what we were talking about before I I started rambling about veterans and, you know, when we get out and how quickly we feel like we have this checklist that we have to start checking off, you know, and if we don't, you know, within a year of getting out, if we don't have this, then we're behind, you know, and we get caught up in that really quickly. And I think it's just, it's always important to look inward and see, you know, where you really want to be and what you really want to do.
That, and it's, I mean, it's really important to understand that there's always hope. You know, you got to open your eyes to the possibilities out there, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of possibilities, right? There's so many of them. And I see so many guys who are, they're just wrapped up in this way of thinking that says, oh, this is all I'm ever going to be. This is all I'm going to ever do. Mm. You know, society's for rich people and people
right.
Doing chances and things like that. And the reality is that, I mean, if you read about people who've accomplished things, I mean, they've gone through struggle. They've gone through so many different things and it's never this easy story that says, oh, they've been handed this or they've been handed that.
Yeah.
It comes down to them seeing the hope in front of them and taking advantage of that hope.
Yeah. And I've struggled with that. I struggled with seeing people with, you know, material success, you know, and outward success and being like, ugh, like I bet their dad's rich, you know, and like, oh, I bet they come from money and like they didn't really have to, and maybe they did, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't hard. It doesn't mean like we all have our own struggles and finances are very stressful, you know, but it's not the answer to your stress. It's not, you know, if you woke up one day and you had a pile of money in your bank account, it would be nice. It would definitely make you feel, you know, a little less stressed out about, you know, your future and stuff like that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that down the road you're going to be happy, you know, and it's this complicated thing where you have to almost put the material and the financial success kind of in the back seat and really focus on your inner success and feeling like a success and feeling like you're at peace with what you're working towards. And then that the rest of that stuff kind of comes in, at least I'm hoping it does. Cause I'm not rolling around in a Range Rover or anything like that. But I'm a guy anyway, but it's this complicated thing because like, and I've had fellow veterans kind of assume things about my books and my success, you know, like, oh, cause you know, I bet you had a connection, right? You had a connection. I'm like, no, I didn't. Like I literally was just throwing my story out there and literally just like, yeah, like I have a really great agent, but even in the literary world, having a great agent that has your back 100% will only get you so far. You know, and it's really just comes down to that tenacity, you know, and to really staying true to your goals and not compromising, you know, that stuff. That was the kind of looking at other people's success for a long time was a struggle for me. You know, I felt really inadequate. When I would hear about another veteran, you know, or even somebody I knew that was doing really well, I would always try to find like holes I could poke in it, you know, not to their face, but like in my own head, I'm like, well, I bet they just got lucky. Or I bet, you know, that their uncle works at that company that they just got that job, you know? And that's just not, you're not doing yourself any favors, you know,
not at all.
By looking at things that way. And you know, you just have to be grateful for their success and be happy for them and know that, you know, it'll come around to you too. If you just continuously kind of, you know, stay true to yourself.
Yeah. You got to figure out what serves you best, and what serves you best is understanding that there are possibilities out there, you know, and that's still huge.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about Semper Fred. What's going on with this?
Yeah, it's so we have we have our collars and leashes, and the first two designs, one of them kind of tells the story of Fred. It's got like the CH-53 helicopter, my Land Cruiser with Fred sitting in the passenger seat. And like, there's a lot, it's one of those things that the longer you look at it, the more you see, you know, like there's compasses and like there's the Afghani, the Hindu Kush mountain range is kind of in the background and lots of little details. And then the other one is kind of more from the perspective of like a dog. Like we kind of wanted to come up with stuff that when you're putting it on your dog, it's kind of what they would be saying to you or kind of what they would want you to feel, you know, cause there's nothing more, more like, I don't know, more uplifting than when it's time to go for a walk and like your dog is just won't sit still and they're so excited and you're trying to put this collar on them. And so we wanted to try to think of something that kind of emulated that response. And so this one, the other one is, it's like a throwback camo to like the World War II Frogman camo pattern. And it says, you know, stubborn positivity, like PAW, you know, and wag your tail. It's a, you know, on the other kind of, and it's just this kind of pattern that goes through. And that's kind of like what we think our dogs are like saying to us, you know, that's what they want us to think. And then the third one is just on our website as of today is the Semper Fred collar. And it's the, we went back to another vintage camo, the chocolate chip, like 90s era desert camo. And it says Semper Fred, and it's got a compass and it's got Fred's little smiley face next to it. And everything we do, it has a lot of detail to it. So even though there's these metal rivets, they actually made from Fred's paw, you know, and we just wanted to give people beyond the book, we wanted to give people something that kind of reminded them of Fred. And we also, every month or two, depending on how, you know, how we feel about the how much money we want to raise. We raise money, a portion of profits goes towards, nonprofits and that specifically work on behalf of animals, or veterans or both. And we try to do through our social media, we try to highlight the work that those organizations are doing. Most recently we did, Team Rubicon, cause they were, it was after the big storms that hit this hurricane season. And, another one, a lady that rescued a ton of dogs down in the Bahamas. I can't remember the name of the organization now, but, every month we try to highlight a different organization. A lot of them we've worked with personally. And so, yeah, it's just another way to tell the story and to share the message of Fred and to connect people. Cause it's fun to hear, you know, people come up to us at our events, you know, they're like, oh, I wore my Fred shirt to the gym the other day. And somebody asked me, you know, who's Fred, what's Fred. And I got to tell them, you know, and people really feel, you know, like they have some ownership over the story and they love telling people that haven't heard it, you know, and that's really fun to hear and fun to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a great story. The book, Craig and Fred, like I said, it makes a great Christmas gift. I think it'd be a fantastic stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
There's an adult version and a kid's version that's out there. And, you know, I just got to say, you know, I'm so glad that you did this. And I'm so glad that you're putting this message out there to the world. It's great to have read it. It's great to have had you on the show. It's great to know you and to call you a friend, man.
Oh, brother. Thanks, man. I remember our first time I was in Connecticut actually. And on the initial book tour for Craig and Fred. And they said, oh, you're going to be on the Warrior Soul podcast. I was like, that sounds awesome. Like, I can't wait for that. And we just geeked out for like 2 hours. Like it was like just this instant, like, and it was really cool to talk to you because you were the first kind of, first veteran centric kind of outlet that I talked to about the book and about the process. And you've actually given me a lot of like internal kind of talking points. Cause you recognize the practice that I was doing at the time, you know, when I was working on the book of like, you know, kind of throwing myself into it and seeing, you know, down these different paths and these different avenues and these different opportunities and seeing what worked. And I didn't really think of it like that, but that's exactly kind of how I went about it. And so it was kind of, it means a lot to me that you were able to kind of put into words, you know, from your own, just from reading our story, like how I went about it. 'Cause it's helped me kind of visualize it, you know, as I've continued on. So thanks, man. It's you're doing incredible things for me and for any veteran or anybody that listens to your podcast or follows you on social media. Like, it's just, we can never have enough of what you're putting out there, man. So thank you.
Thank you, man. And where are you guys headed now? So you're in Wyoming right now.
We're in Wyoming. We're holed up in a little cabin in Jackson and having a good time. And we're headed to Denver. We have a corporate event in Denver on December 1st. And then we're heading back across the country. We're going to stop in Omaha and meet up with some of the guys I was in Afghanistan with, meet up and do a little hunting trip outside of Omaha, Nebraska. And then D.C. We're going to be in D.C. the whole kind of week leading up to December 13th, because December 13th is a Friday and it's our annual fundraiser. It's Schmalz Fest. And this year, every year it gets bigger and better. And this year we've taken a big leap. We're at a much bigger venue. It's in Georgetown. It's called Gypsy Sally's, and they have it's just going to be, another incredible night, because we can pack this place. I think it's up to like 300 or 400 people capacity. And we're really just pulling out all the stops and just going full throttle into Schmalz Fest. 'Cause, this is a big year for it. It'll be the ninth year since Justin's passing. And we want to kind of continue the momentum, up until, you know, till the 10 year anniversary. And his whole family is coming down from Pittsburgh, and they bring more people every year. And my band is getting amped up, and you know, it's this amazing night where it's like so many people from all over DC and all over the country. People are actually flying in from Minnesota this year where we've done events before. And, they all come together, to celebrate Justin, but it's really, I always try to remind everybody leading up to the night and throughout the night, like, think of someone you lost, think of someone that left us too soon, and kind of bring them into the night and bring their memory and into the room with us. And it just creates this atmosphere that is really magical and really special. And I'm so excited for another year of that. And so, yeah, we'll be, and we're raising money for Semper Fi Fund this year, which is really exciting. They're just an incredible organization. And so excited to kind of, to switch gears a little bit in terms of who we're focusing on, you know, in terms of an organization. And then we go home after that for like 3 weeks, and then we hit the road again. We're going to New Mexico, Phoenix, Vegas, and then Cal. We actually kind of probably be in Cali at some point, so I'll try to link up with you. But
we're gonna get together, man.
Yeah,
do a hike or something like
that. Yeah, awesome. So yeah, we're gonna be back. We're gonna get like a 3 week break, and then we're right back to it. So it's and somewhere in the middle of all this, I got to keep working on my next book. But it's a magical journey, man, and I'm glad that we're kind of on it together. So thanks again for having me on, and you know, to everybody out there, like, keep listening to Chris, and keep kind of pursuing, you know, what you're looking for, you know, and you don't know what you're looking for until you see it, you know, and then you can grab onto it. So just keep that skinny pedal down.
Absolutely, man. And just remind everybody your website and your social media.
Yeah, I always forget that stuff. Our website is fredtheafghan.com. Social media on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, it's all Fred the Afghan. And if anybody wants to reach out and say hi, the best way to do that is through the website. We have a contact form. Any questions, any thoughts, anything, you know, there's no magical machine running our stuff. It's me and Nora. So yeah, just reach out, say hi, and we happy to answer any questions for anybody. And, looking forward to continuing this journey.
Awesome, man. Can we get one more shot with Fred before we,
head out? Come here, Fred. Come here, handsome. Sleepy boy. Come on. Oh, he's stretching. All right. Wow. Very nice. Come here, a little closer. Thank you. Oh, there he is. Oh.
get a little selfie here. What's going on, Fred?
Nice. Oh, sorry. Did I wake you up? Yeah.
You're gone, man.
Yeah, dude.
Awesome. Yeah, he's one of the most handsome dogs I've ever seen.
He really is. Oh, that's stinky. Oh, you got stinky nap breath. Wow.
Awesome, guys. Well, everybody out there, again, I want to thank you for listening. Craig, Fred, thank you both for coming on again. Kind of a yearly tradition we bring you on.
Yeah.
And I love that. Really look forward to seeing what else you guys do. And like Craig said during this interview, you know, this is about you guys. It's about getting out there, living life. And so get out there, find that meaning, and live your best lives while you can.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys, there you have it. That is our interview, our third interview with Craig Grassi, the author of Craig and Fred. I highly recommend you go get that book. I will list a link up on the show notes so you can find it on Amazon. And, you know, guys, I really want to wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And I truly hope that over this holiday season, you find it within yourself to find the beauty in life, because it's there for all of us. No matter what you're going through, no matter how hard life gets, you can find things in this life that will bring true meaning to what you're doing. And you do that by helping and serving others. You know, the big reason why I do this show isn't to become famous. It's not to run a business. It's not to do anything but to serve you. And I hope that I'm doing that. I hope that you're getting a lot out of this. And I hope that you live a life of meaning, of purpose, and one that fulfills every ambition in your heart. The only thing I ask of you in return is to let other people know about the show. Let them know how it's helped you. Let them know how it could help them and share it over to them. And another way you can do that is by heading over to iTunes and writing us a written rating and review. Those iTunes reviews, they help so much to drive the show. They help so much to get this show into the ears of more veterans, more people who can use this information. And it doesn't matter if you're not listening on iTunes, you could still write a review on iTunes by just heading over to Apple Podcasts, looking up the Warrior Soul Podcast, and then writing your review there. I know that some of you might be listening on Stitcher or Android or some of the other applications that are out there, but iTunes is what truly drives the algorithm, and that's why we ask you to write the reviews there. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can do so by buying gear from our store. That's up at warriorsoul.shop. We've got great t-shirts that have been designed, printed, and made by U.S. Marine Corps veterans up in our Santa Barbara warehouse. And then beyond that, if you want to support yourself, you can join the Warriors Obituary Society. Like I said, that's a group where we empower men to live absolutely epic lives, worthy of epic obituaries. You get an 8-week development program. You get a fully customized training program that you develop. You get a fully customized finance program. And it's a really great all-around program for anybody who's trying to develop themselves into the best person possible. So with that, guys, I want to thank you so much for listening. We'll be back at you on Christmas. I'm going to have a Christmas message for you. And, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And I hope that you're spending this holiday with family. For those of you deployed, thank you so much for being there. Remember that this is a short period of time where someday you're going to be like me. You're going to be older. You're going to be spending Christmas at home, and you're going to wish that you were still 19 and in the military again. I promise you that. So keep your heads up and stay frosty. And like I said, I'll be back at you soon with another awesome